Joining us now here on our makeshift set, in Bedford, New Hampshire, is our friend and colleague Jessica Tarlov, Fox News contributor, co-host of The Five, head of research at Bustle, chief baby correspondent at The Guy Benson Show.
Are we co-chiefs? Because you got a baby now.
Yeah, but you have a second one on the way now. So you're
it's
just
true.
Like
you better get to work.
One step ahead.
Yeah.
A little different for us. We're working on it. So let's just take
the faith.
We'll take a break from our commercial break gossip and get to actual issues here.
Okay.
I know a groan from everyone is like, keep going.
It was good.
The gossip was juicy. I want to talk about a few different things here. Number one. In the Israel-Gaza conflict, I don't know if you saw this. It didn't get a lot of attention, but I wrote about it today for townhall.com. A few days ago, the EU Parliament passed a resolution calling for a ceasefire. I was like, okay, big surprise. You know,
right.
It's a bunch of European bureaucrats telling Israel to stop fighting these terrorists. I'm not surprised at all. But then when I lifted the hood a little bit and saw what they actually passed, I was surprised because there were things in there that I objected to, and they used words like occupation and other things that I don't think are fair. But the resolution, again, this is from the Parliament of the European Union, said, we demand a ceasefire if, first, every hostage is released and Hamas is dismantled as an organization.
Yeah.
That is a ceasefire I can get behind. Now, this means nothing. Europe doesn't matter to really Israel. They're going to do whatever they have to do. But I sort of wonder, would it be smart for, let's say, a coalition of Republicans and pro-Israel Democrats to introduce a resolution in our Congress that says almost the exact same thing, a ceasefire resolution contingent on those two factors, and then see who might find ways to vote no on that?
I think that it would fall into the category of very interesting for us to see. Mm-hmm. But it would be more of a show trial type of thing, right?
It'd
so that we
symbolic.
Could actually, yeah, which, I mean, congresses and parliaments all over the world do a lot of symbolic stuff, and it matters because
and
it's,
it can
remember,
be clarifying. It can be clarifying, like, if you are against, if you are the ceasefire people,
right? But you don't,
vote for a ceasefire because it requires
it means freeing Jews,
right?
Yeah,
I mean that's a tough spot to put them in, and I would like, I think they deserve to be put in that spot.
Well, that's also reflective of the Biden administration's feelings about this, right? I mean, they have been unequivocally stand with Bibi. And obviously things have gotten a little tenuous in the last few days after Bibi's river to the sea comments. Mm-hmm. And we always know that Israel's official position has been a one state solution. And begrudgingly, of course, we're never getting rid of Palestine. Right. Mm-hmm. But Bibi saying that in the middle of all of this really complicates things for President Biden and allows the left flank of our party, and frankly, a lot of centrists who are concerned by it, you know, Bibi is overwhelmingly unpopular at home and abroad, to say, excuse me, I thought river to the sea was genocide talk, right? When Palestinians say it.
Well, it is, because they're talking about wiping Israel off the map.
Right. But Bibi is not saying I'm wildly interested in the futures of all of these Palestinians. He's using the same language that some people who want a one-state solution on the Palestinian side use. You just should not use the term from the river to the sea if you've lobbed it against the other side for that.
I think it has a different implication when he says it. I wouldn't use it personally because, although it is sort of funny, just like I'm gonna claim the smear for myself, right? Sometimes people do that. I just think the easiest and correct thing and the undeniably true thing for Israel to say, no matter where you are on the political spectrum in Israel, which is, we can't even begin a serious conversation about a peace process or a two-state solution when the other side wants to destroy us and there's no one to
negotiate.
And they
said we're going to have a million October 7th.
Right.
We'll do it as many times as we need to. So, yes, to your point, I'd like a symbolic vote on it. But even more than that, I would like a real vote on it. That's the thing. Like, we are getting to the point where I think most people have accepted that more of these hostages are dead than we can. Right. So if there are, I think loosely there are 150.
A little less, I think. And some of them we believe are deceased.
Right. But I think it's more than right. So if there are, if you're assuming, I'm making up this number, that 20 are dead, let's say, I don't think it's unfair to assume that maybe 40 have actually passed away or they are in such poor condition that by the time we get to them, they are not going to be with us, or they're not going to have lives even a modicum of representative of the lives that they had before they were taken,
mm-hmm.
right? Like these, the reports of the trauma, especially that the children have endured,
no, it's
being
awful.
Stuck in dark closets.
Well, and it's just the women, what's happened to the women?
Well,
my God,
I've spoken extensively about the sexual assault.
It's so bad.
I don't know how someone survives that, frankly. So yeah, I'd like it. Roundabout getting to your point. And I think that it is actually representative of how strong European nations have been on this issue, not necessarily voting on the floor of the UN, but when you listen to the rhetoric coming out of Germany, mm-hmm. for instance. The
Germans have been fairly good.
Not just fairly good. I mean, they went harder in their rhetoric at the beginning than people were saying that Biden was, that they were the most declarative about this, and they have a lot to make up for.
They do.
and they live that. I know you've been to Berlin as well.
Yeah.
The city is framed around, we're sorry, right? We did this terrible thing.
Yeah, the Holocaust memorial right by Brandenburg Gate is really haunting.
And right in front of the U.S. Embassy.
Yep, right there.
It's incredible. So I think it's a good thing. It's a step in the right direction. And it's also a definition of a ceasefire that everybody should be able to live with.
Agreed. And I think it was encouraging to see that out of the UN, out of the EU, rather, as opposed
to the
UN.
You're not going to get that out of the UN.
Because the UN's a joke. Like, I think it only underscores how useless and corrupt the UN is to see the EU have so much more moral clarity than the disgrace that the UN has been really ever since October 7th in almost every way.
Well, I think that something that's different, because I'm not as much of a UN hater as you are. The EU is intimately involved in Mideast affairs in a way that the totality of the UN isn't, and in what happened during World War II and the Holocaust. I mean, every single European country was touched by the migration of the taking of Jews and the migration of Jews after the war ended. And it is fundamentally part of the makeup of Europe to be living in the aftermath
sure.
of
and
World
all,
War
and look,
II.
And the EU also doesn't have Russia or China or any of these
horrible
nations.
Yeah, they don't have to be like, Iran, what do you think?
Right, exactly. And before we move on from this topic, I saw this earlier. They recovered, because the IDF is going through Gaza and finding so many of these tunnels,
yeah.
more tunnels than the London Underground and the Paris subway system combined, which is wild. And they're finding some of the places where they held these hostages, including in hospitals and elsewhere, some of them in these tunnels. And they're finding little drawings done by these children.
I can't.
And you look at, I'm looking at it right now. It is hard to look at that and not get a little choked up and angry thinking about what that kid had to go through. And I saw this posted on social media, and a lot of the Hamas apologists are like, well, you say you're upset about this live child drawing that, and why don't you care about dead Palestinian kids? And I don't know how you can look
right
at that little doodle by a little child being held against her will by terrorists and find a way to what about it away. It is sick.
And also, who doesn't care about Palestinian children? I've met no one who isn't concerned about the death toll on the other side.
Right. I blame Hamas for that, but it is a horrible thing happening
right.
to little children. It's not their fault
no.
that they live in Gaza.
No. But there are a lot more child soldiers on that side than there are on the Israeli side
yes.
who are participating in this.
Correct.
And adding
Correct.
To the kid sad pile, I mean, beyond the sexual assault images and descriptions that obviously stay with you forever, the iPads that were left on in the kibbutz homes that were still playing Bluey or Sesame Street or all these things that my daughter watches, that Christine's daughter watched when she was younger, and they're still running because these kids were ripped out of their breakfast table seat where they were getting to, you know, Blippi is on his way to a water park in Australia, and they were getting to see that, and then they were taken.
Or murdered. Yeah.
Most of them eventually murdered. Hopefully some, you know, when that is the silver lining, that maybe they are alive in a tunnel somewhere drawing a little house.
The little baby who just turned one in captivity.
Do you think that family is dead or not? I cannot follow the propaganda on that family.
I don't know.
Bibas.
You just have to pray.
I know.
And, it's just
and that father, what he got put through.
The evil is just unfathomable. So I just wanted to bring that up.
I like
because it's been on my mind, and the EU vote I thought was interesting, so I wanted to raise that to you. Let's bring it back home here and talk about the reason that we're here in New Hampshire. Yep. The primary is tomorrow. On your side of the aisle, let's just clear out some of the spin here. Look, I'm someone who kind of likes tradition. I like the idea of Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina. Both parties do it. In a lot of ways,
yeah.
I am. In some ways, not so. But okay. In this case, I kind of like the tradition. I remember in 2020, when you have an incumbent, parties do different things to protect the incumbent. So in Virginia, for example, where I vote, they just canceled the Republican primary. There wasn't one at all because they didn't want to have...
I remember you were bummed about that.
Yeah, they wanted Trump to have 100%, and they didn't want to have any potential for embarrassment with any votes going anywhere else. Fine.
And there was no reason for it.
There's no reason for it. So I voted in the Democratic primary just to vote. I voted for Amy Klobuchar as a non-socialist, like non-total psycho. So I was like, there you go. That was the vote. To change the calendar so much and to relegate Iowa and New Hampshire to sort of like second-class citizens and move up South Carolina, I know that helps Joe Biden.
Well,
are you comfortable with that? Is there any part of you that thinks that this is a mistake?
No. And being in Iowa last week and talking to people, I understood even more why it was done. So if Iowa's Democratic Party hadn't bungled 2020 as terribly as it did,
we were sitting live on air until
2, 3 in the morning with Shannon Bream saying, like,
what's
going on here? I don't know if that would have happened. Frankly, they showed themselves to be completely incapable of living up to the tradition that you extol.
The state party.
It had nothing to do with the national party. And I actually wrote an op-ed in The Hill years ago called The White Privilege Democratic Primary. And it was about how white liberals.
How woke of you.
I have my moments. Mm-hmm. But the Iowa-New Hampshire going first system prioritizes Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and Pete Buttigieg, right, over people who are actually going to be able to build a coalition of Democratic voters. And that's the reason for the move. Obviously, Whip Clyburn had a lot to do with Joe Biden being able to win the nomination. But we are a big tent party, and the most consistent and strongest voting bloc of Democrats are black women. I don't know. You could probably count, I don't want to say on two hands, but the number of black people that are showing up to vote in Iowa or in New Hampshire. And the makeup of the Republican Party is just vastly different. And this may suit you a lot better than it does for us. So I think it was really reflective, obviously, of how Joe Biden was able to get his win, but also who the Democratic Party is. And it probably should have been axed a long time ago. And the fact that 2020 was done so badly was just a good excuse to be able to do it now.
Okay. Another question here. And I played some of the audio earlier for Brett Baier. Nikki Haley is kind of leaning a bit into the age thing, not just for Biden, but also for Trump.
Yeah.
And she's saying, look, they're
both too old.
They're both too old. Most Americans agree that they're both old. I think that Biden is older seeming than Trump in a lot of ways, and the polls clearly bear that out. But she's trying to lump them together. I get that. I just wonder, do you think that's a message that works for her?
I mean, we'll know a lot more tomorrow.
Yeah, we will.
And at least she's getting, I guess, what she wanted, probably a little bit too late, but a two-person race.
Yeah.
Right? This is the Trump vote and the non-Trump vote.
Well, and this is the other thing. All the way back to 2016, how many of the dozen people that have run against Donald Trump in a primary have salivated over the possibility or the prospect of a two-person,
if I got him alone in a room. Yeah.
She's got it now.
Right.
Right? Credit to her. She's the last person standing.
Totally.
And now what is she going to do with it? Again, I keep saying you can squint and maybe see a path for her to...
I don't think so. I can't squint that hard.
You have to squint really hard. But I think if tomorrow's a double-digit loss for her, it's just...
And then she's going home where she's down 30.
Yeah, I just think that's...
And everyone's endorsing him. I don't think the age thing will be the reason that Nikki Haley gets over the hump. I think it will just be I don't want Trump vote. Even for the people who like him, but they're not into the chaos, right? That still exists as a contingent who's like, yeah, I liked his policies. I think we went in a right, a good direction. We had good economic
news. Turn the page.
Right. Yeah. But I don't think because he feels too old. Their ages manifest differently. I feel like Trump is almost like Benjamin Button. Like he's going back, like
he's
talking
younger?
He's talking more stream of consciousness. You know, his style.
He's
is younger.
Yeah.
It just is. The way that he's not, his sentences, have five words in them? I mean, sometimes they don't have punctuation, but you know what I mean?
It's very stream of consciousness.
And Biden looks like an aging person,
yes.
And Trump looks like a maniac. And a maniac can be younger. You don't have to agree with maniac. That's my word.
There's some mania from time to time, I would say. And it's an interesting choice that the American people will likely have in 9 or 10 months. And it's going to be very bumpy between now and then. So buckle up. We'll be here on the Guy Benson Show and elsewhere with Jessica Tarlof, our colleague and friend here. Jesse, it's great to see you.
Great to see you.
And let's send it to break so we can continue our gossip.
Fabulous. I want to get back to it.
We'll be right back.
I'm still mad.